Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Alex Ritson, and in the early hours of Tuesday, the 6th of February, these are our main stories. Britain's King Charles has been diagnosed with cancer. The news was made public in a statement from Buckingham Palace.
It is unprecedented, and I think we have to applaud the palace for having come out with something like that.
The palace has not said what type of cancer the king has been diagnosed with, but it is not prostate cancer. Well wishes have been flooding in.
I know the whole house will wish to join me in expressing our sympathies and our very best wishes for the successful treatment and a speedy recovery following tonight's news.
The 75-year-old king will undergo a course of treatment and has been advised to postpone public duties but will undertake state duties and paperwork. Also in this podcast, the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Saudi Arabia for talks on a truce in Gaza. And an independent body says the social media giant Meta should label fake posts rather than taking them down. Buckingham Palace has announced King Charles has been diagnosed with cancer and will step back from public engagements while he receives treatment. In a statement, the palace said King Charles remained wholly positive about his treatment, which began on Monday. The Speaker of the House of Commons, Lindsay Hoyle, made a short statement wishing the king well.
I know the whole house will wish to join me in expressing our sympathies with His Majesty the King following the news announcement this evening. Our thoughts are, of course, with His Majesty and his family, and we all wish to send him our very best wishes for the successful treatment and a speedy recovery following tonight's news.
And this was the reaction of people in London.
I think it's very sad. It's coming a year after the coronation. I think my thoughts are with him, with the family, and that he gets well soon.
Having been a person in the public eye for so long, I'm sure he is aware of how much that will connect him to other people, other families who go through that. I'm sure he'll fight it like anyone else would, but it's a horrible shock.
The surprise announcement came after the king was discharged from hospital after surgery for an enlarged prostate last month. Our royal correspondent Sean Coughlan told me more about the reaction to the news.
Well, as you say, it was something of a surprise what it was. We do know the treatment's already begun and he's an outpatient and presumably will be receiving regular treatment in the days and months ahead. As you mentioned, it's sufficient that he'll have to step back from public-facing engagements. He won't be out and about, but he's not stepping down as head of state. He's going to carry on with the paperwork, doing his red boxes and carrying on with private meetings. And so in that sense, it'll be business as usual, but clearly his main preoccupation will be getting better, I think, in the days and weeks ahead. And we know that he's spoken to his family, and we know that Prince Harry, who now lives in California, will be coming back to Britain to see him in the days ahead.
And it is all very sudden, because he was at that church in Norfolk, near his country estate in Sandringham, on Sunday.
That's right, and looking very sprightly, waving to crowds and appearing to be on the mend. And all the mood music, as it were, was quite positive. He sounds optimistic. He's talking about wanting to get back to work again and to embrace whatever the treatment involved. But obviously it's some serious concern, and we won't see him again carrying out public duties for some unspecified amount of time.
I'm seeing coming in on the wires the US State Department spokesman Vedant Patel described it as an incredibly sad piece of news and says, I'm very sorry for the king and his family. He tells a briefing of reporters that the Biden administration's thoughts are with the king and the royal family. This is notable because the king really does still have a very important place in British public life, doesn't he?
Well, he does, and also internationally. I think that we've seen his role in environmental matters has been very high profile. He gave the keynote address at the most recent COP summit in Dubai. And the fact there's been this cascade of concern from people within Britain and overseas shows that his status and how much there are concerns. It might be wrong to start being too gloomy about this. You know, this is so far something which we would like to think has been caught in the early stages and treatment's beginning. But it does show that the level of concern by that sort of contribution, and from Rishi Sunak and from Keir Starmer in Britain, senior politicians who wanted to share their own concerns as well. We don't know exactly what it is, and presumably that will determine the path that comes ahead. Where it lays and its prognosis hasn't been revealed, and I think won't necessarily be revealed in certainly in the near future.
Sean Coughlan. Our health editor, Hugh Pym, told me more about the diagnosis and the King's treatment options.
He had this treatment for a benign prostate enlargement 10 days or so ago and left hospital, and it was stressed at the time that that was not prostate cancer, that it was benign. But what appears to have happened is that in the course of having that treatment, another condition was identified, tests were carried out, and then this diagnosis of another cancer, but we don't know what sort of cancer. Now, it's probably fortuitous for the King that this was diagnosed when they were already carrying out another procedure. It might have gone unnoticed. Some cancers have very, very few symptoms. But we don't know at what stage it's at. We know that he's had his first bout of treatment as an outpatient. And in the words of a palace spokesperson, he remains at home in London. So we assume that he'll go in for further treatment. And the palace has said that the King elected to make his diagnosis public once the treatment had begun because he wanted to get the news out there. He, as Prince of Wales, was a patron of a number of cancer-related charities, and in this capacity, the King had often spoken publicly in support of cancer patients and their loved ones and NHS staff and others who care for them. So it's in keeping with getting the news out there as quickly as possible. That was the wishes of the King, we're told. Maybe in previous decades, this sort of thing wouldn't have been given so much publicity. And interestingly, when it was made clear that he'd had this treatment for a benign prostate enlargement, there were a lot of calls to helplines run by the National Health Service going on to NHS websites. It raised a lot of awareness. It was made clear that the King was encouraged by the way that his diagnosis had encouraged others to come forward and check their own conditions.
Chemotherapy is a horrible treatment, whatever age you are, but at the age of 75, that's quite a thing, isn't it?
Yes, chemotherapy seems likely. It's not been confirmed, and actually Buckingham Palace said they wouldn't comment on his ongoing treatment or what the cancer was. But chemotherapy or radiotherapy are very often first-line treatments for recently diagnosed cancer patients. For patients who are diagnosed and have chemotherapy, it's quite an intense form of treatment, and it can leave the patient pretty debilitated for a week or so and then maybe go back to their ordinary routines and then come back again the following month for further chemo. But generally, it takes time for a consultant, for a senior doctor, to be clear that the cancer has gone. So there'll be ongoing checks and scans, certainly. Cancer risk does go up with age. From the age of 75, some UK statistics show that a third of new cancers diagnosed every year are in those 75 or over. So the King, given his age, would have been a bit more vulnerable, but he's been very fit and well for his life, very active, and he, we are told, is wholly positive about his treatment.
Our health editor, Hugh Pym. Rob Watson is our political correspondent. He told me more about the news that Prince Harry will be returning to Britain to be reunited with his father.
We are hearing that Prince Harry has not only spoken to his father, King Charles called him to tell him what was up, but that he will be coming back to the UK in the coming days. And it's not a surprise. You don't have to be one of those people that follows all the kind of gossip columns about the royal family to know that they have had a very difficult relationship the last couple of years. It's why Prince Harry is living in the United States. But again, and a lot of families, a lot of people listening will be familiar with this, that when illness strikes, families do tend to rally around, and that seems to be what's happening in this case.
I understand the King telephoned all his family members personally to give them this diagnosis.
Yes, we don't have the exact timings on that, but they certainly heard about it before the very brief four-paragraph statement released by Buckingham Palace. I think that's not at all surprising that he wanted to tell the closest members of his family, the royal family, in person exactly what it was that he was facing.
And I'm looking also on the wires. We're getting goodwill messages coming in from all over the world. President Biden says he's concerned about the King. Asked if he had a message for the King, Biden said, yes, I'm concerned about him. I just heard this diagnosis. Hopefully I'll be talking to him soon. And the former US President Donald Trump, writing on social media, he is a wonderful man who I got to know well during my presidency. We all pray that he has a fast and a full recovery. He does have a lot of goodwill coming in.
He does indeed. And while he's had his ups and downs in terms of his popularity with the British public, certainly the politicians that I know who've dealt with him and politicians around the world, heads of state, he is popular. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Those who've worked with him closely say he is immensely charming, that he cares very much about those issues that we all know that he's been pressing, particularly concern for the environment, way ahead of everybody else who was doing it. So he's always been a favourite on the international diplomatic circuit. And I think interesting is what's happened here in the UK, because I mentioned that his relationship with the British people have been a bit up and down. I mean, anybody old enough to remember the mid-1990s would know that as his marriage to Princess Diana was falling to pieces, he became very unpopular indeed, and an awful lot of British people, particularly younger people, with people taking sides. A lot of people tended to side with Diana's version of events. But it's really interesting, if you look at opinion polling over the last 10, 20 years, and particularly if you look back at polling since he became king, I looked at one from a company called YouGov, Alex. He's now got a favourability rating of 60% at the end of last year. And I think most politicians would die to have a favourability rating of 60%.
And this diagnosis, Robert, is just proof, really, isn't it, that cancer can strike anyone?
Yes, absolutely. And again, I draw your attention. I mentioned that the statement from Buckingham Palace was very short, just four paragraphs. I may as well just read the last one because it goes to your question. And it says, His Majesty has chosen to share his diagnosis to prevent speculation and in the hope it may assist public understanding for all those around the world who are affected by cancer. So clearly King Charles, Buckingham Palace, the royal family are thinking, right, we've got a specific issue to deal with, which is how do we deal with King Charles having cancer? But while we're about it, let's try and do some sort of public service work here, not just in the UK in terms of showing sympathy, showing awareness of cancer, but actually beyond these shores and saying, right, everybody needs to kind of check themselves over.
Rob Watson. Now to some other news. Israel's Defence Minister Yoav Gallant has said his country's forces will reach Hamas militants in what he called their last holdout in Gaza, the city of Rafah in the south. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians have taken refuge there. Mr. Gallant was speaking as the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken began his fifth visit to the Middle East since the war in Gaza began. He's held talks with the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman in Riyadh. Our correspondent in Jerusalem, Barbara Platt-Usher, has this update.
Mr. Blinken's immediate concern is trying to get a truce in Gaza to release hostages and allow humanitarian aid in. But he also has an interest in looking at what happens in the region after the war, what happens in Gaza after the war. The United States has returned to the idea of a two-state solution, a Palestinian state alongside Israel as a solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And it sees Saudi Arabia as key to that because they want to wrap it into a deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel, a normalization deal. The Israelis, or at least the Israeli Prime Minister, has voiced quite strong opposition to the idea of a two-state solution. So the approach of the Americans is to try to use Israel's interest in relations with Saudi Arabia to move it in that direction. So he's looking at post-war plans while the war is still going on. The most immediate efforts for a truce haven't been achieved yet, but these talks with Saudi Arabia have been part of the overall picture. The deal, the one that's active, is one for stopping the hostilities long enough to release the hostages and to get humanitarian aid into Gaza. And so right now what we are doing is waiting for Hamas to come back with its response to basically a framework that was put forward by the top intelligence officials in the U.S., Qatar, Egypt, and Israel. They're proposing a sort of agreement in phases during which in each phase the Hamas would release Israeli hostages, Israel would release Palestinian prisoners, and then move on to another phase. But the key part of it is that it does not commit Israel to ending the war, whereas Hamas says it wants any sort of temporary truce to lead to a permanent ceasefire. And that's one of the key sticking points. So they're waiting to see whether Hamas is willing in any way to build on this framework to get to this truce.
Barbara Platt-Usher. A team of student researchers has made a giant step towards solving one of archaeology's greatest puzzles. Using artificial intelligence, the scholars successfully read the contents of a charred scroll that was buried during the eruption of Mount Vesuvius nearly 2,000 years ago. Rory Gallimore reports.
In the 18th century, archaeologists made a remarkable discovery in Herculaneum. They unearthed an entire library of papyrus scrolls from the ruins of a Roman villa. But there was a problem. Any attempt to open the scorched documents ended in failure. They were simply too fragile and crumbled to dust. Now researchers have used AI to decipher CT scans of the scrolls. After years of painstaking work, they revealed a previously unknown philosophical text discussing senses and pleasure. It paves the way for the hundreds of remaining scrolls to be translated. The breakthrough has generated huge excitement and a cash reward of $700,000 for three researchers.
Rory Gallimore. Still to come in the Global News podcast.
Last Friday, she put a post on her Instagram, and a day later, Miss Poonam posted a video saying that she had faked her demise.
Stay tuned to find out why an Instagram post by a famous Indian actress has sparked fury. The independent body that reviews how the owner of Facebook moderates its content has said the firm should label fake posts rather than remove them. The oversight board said Meta was right not to take down a fake video of President Biden, but said its policies needed tightening ahead of the election in the United States. Our technology reporter Chris Vallance has more.
The video of President Biden had been edited to make it appear he had inappropriately touched his granddaughter's chest. Accompanying text also falsely suggested he was a paedophile. But in spite of its libelous content, the video did not fall foul of Meta's policies. Currently, these apply only to videos that have been manipulated using AI, in which people appear to say things they did not say. But AI-generated audio is also not covered. Concern about that has been growing after a fake call from President Biden urged people not to vote in a Democratic primary election.
We know the value of voting Democratic when our votes count. It's important that you save your vote for the November election.
Louise Stewart of the Oversight Board said Meta's policies didn't make much sense.
They were focusing on removing content altered by AI, but other content which had been altered by less sophisticated means was overlooked by those policies. And we think it's absolutely crucial in this 2024 election year, when there's going to be much more of this kind of content online, then we think they need to take steps to tackle it.
For its part, Meta said it would respond to the board's recommendations.
Chris Vallance with that report. In India, the actress and model Poonam Pandey has caused uproar on social media by faking her own death from cervical cancer. Late last week, a statement was released on her official Instagram account saying the 32-year-old actress had bravely fought the disease and died. The BBC's Jan Harvey Mule in India told Lukwesa Burak more about what happened.
Last Friday, she put a post on her Instagram page that claimed that she had died with cervical cancer. This came as a shock to her about 1.3 million followers, because just days ago she was quite active on social media. So soon obituaries started pouring in, and her colleagues and co-stars posted messages about their sadness. People started talking about it. And a day later, Miss Poonam posted a video saying that she had faked her demise as a part of a social media campaign. And that got many people angry, because this is not the first time something like this has happened with her. Way back in 2011, she had promised that she would strip for the Indian cricket team if they won World Cup. And that is something that shot her to fame. So many condemned her for, you know, talking about cervical cancer like that.
What kind of things were people saying?
Some called it morbidity marketing. Some criticized the media because media reported a death without verifying. But then journalists also came in and said that it was her Instagram page, her official page, that was reporting her demise. Later, the agency behind her campaign came forward and apologized because many people felt triggered by the whole campaign. Poonam has maintained that he has got people talking about the issue because cervical cancer is a big problem in India. But critics are questioning whether her act was demeaning the seriousness about this disease. And people are saying that one should not joke about death. There are some who are also making memes about the whole incident.
I know that India alone accounts for a quarter of the worldwide burden of cervical cancer. How seriously is it taken by the government?
Cervical cancer is actually the second most common cancer among Indian women. It claims over 77,000 lives every year. Those deaths could actually be avoided with HPV vaccines and medical tests that can reduce the risk of death. But there is still not much awareness about these vaccines or the cancer itself. And that is why government actually just few days ago launched a scheme where they say that they are going to provide free vaccines and affordable vaccines to young girls. So many are actually questioning the timing of Poonam's post, because just few days ago, the government had made that announcement and now this happens. Majority people are saying that this is not the way you should talk about death by cancer, because it's quite traumatic for people who have already suffered through this or for people who have their relatives going through cervical cancer.
And after she'd finished the conversation, Jen Harvey told Rukwesa Burak that she herself did not know about cervical cancer until she was 21. The former Barcelona footballer Dani Alves has been denied a request for his rape trial to be delayed. The Brazilian went on trial in Barcelona on Monday, accused of the rape of a 23-year-old woman in a nightclub toilet in the city. Alves also played for top European teams, including Paris Saint-Germain and Juventus. I got the latest from our correspondent, Guy Hedgeko, in Spain.
The allegation is that in the VIP section of a nightclub in Barcelona in December 2022, Dani Alves lured this young woman, who was 23 at the time, into a bathroom there and then raped her, and then left the nightclub. Soon after that, the woman who claims that he raped her then reported this to the people in the nightclub, and the police immediately closed down the bathroom itself and started investigating. But these are obviously very serious allegations, and if he were to be found guilty at the end of this trial, he could face a jail term of up to 12 years.
What do we know so far about the evidence against him?
The prosecution says it has a good deal of evidence, including video evidence from inside the nightclub of the movements of Dani Alves and the young woman who says she was raped. Also evidence from witnesses who were there. We've already heard from the cousin of the woman who says Dani Alves raped her, who is testifying today. Also forensic evidence, which is yet to come. But for example, fingerprints from inside the bathroom. Dani Alves, of course, denies these allegations and says that this encounter was completely consensual.
Dani Alves, of course, joins a list of top-flight players who faced accusations of rape. And this, of course, at an interesting time for Spain, which has experienced its own Me Too movement.
Well, yes, it has. The issue of sexual consent has been a massive debate in Spain, particularly because of what happened last summer when the president of the Spanish Football Federation, Luis Rubiales, kissed one of the Spanish women's players who just won the World Cup on the lips in public. And that's triggered a series of events which led to the removal of Mr. Rubiales from his post and a big social backlash against him. And what was seen as a sort of Spanish version of the Me Too movement, whereby sort of relations between men and women, I think, was sort of perhaps recalibrated. But people started, you know, looking at them slightly differently. And there was a feeling that the issue of consent was suddenly much more under scrutiny.
Guy Hedgeko. Workers at the leading South Korean construction company, the Buyung Group, who are thinking of starting a family or adding to it, could become $70,000 richer. The firm has announced a lucrative incentive to try to help tackle Korea's birth rate, the lowest in the world. Our Asia-Pacific editor Celia Hatton told Oliver Conway why the company is getting involved.
The founder of Buyung Group says that he's worried that the country itself won't last beyond the next 20 years if it doesn't do more to replace its population. He cited even current military levels. South Korea needs 200,000 new recruits per year In 2022, the entire country only had 250,000 babies born. So that's the official reason. Some are questioning the founder of the group himself. He's already served two prison sentences for embezzlement and tax evasion. He's a South Korean billionaire, one of the country's richest men. He was just pardoned last August and allowed to return to management of his company. So it's perhaps not so much of a surprise that he's coming out in a big way supporting government policies at the moment.
Might other countries follow suit?
Other countries, I think, are considering it, but other companies in South Korea certainly are coming up with their own ways of trying to tackle the low birth rate, like offering South Korean workers the choice to work part-time, infertility treatments, up to 2 years of parental leave. I should say that Buyong Group itself has said that if any worker at Buyong Group decides to have a third child, they have the choice between accepting a $225,000 payment or the permanent rental of an apartment. So this company in particular really is trying to go out on a limb to try to encourage more births. Even at the announcement, the founder of the group, who's 84 years old, very white-haired, was surrounded by workers all holding small children of their own. So it's going to be interesting to see if the birth rate, even within this one particular company in South Korea, really goes up after this announcement today.
Briefly, that claim that the country couldn't survive after 20 years. That's quite strong. Is it really that bad in South Korea?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, Ollie, it's the lowest birth rate in the world. There's 0.84 births per woman. That means that South Korea isn't even replacing its current population. And this has been a problem, a declining birth rate, for 20 years. So that's really an issue for South Korea. And they really are concerned that they just don't have enough workers. They don't have enough soldiers to be able to allow the country to continue. And I should say that immigration isn't seriously being considered as a way to boost the population. They're really only looking at the birth rate right now.
Celia Hatton. Let's return to our top story that King Charles is being treated for cancer. Dicky Arbiter was Queen Elizabeth's press secretary, and he was media manager for Prince Charles, as he was, and the late Princess Diana. Paul Henley asked him whether the fact that the palace has admitted this diagnosis is unprecedented.
It is unprecedented, and I think we have to applaud the palace for having come out with something like that. The king, he is pragmatic about these things. That's something that runs through the family. It is something that's been diagnosed. He is going to have to deal with it in the way that the medics suggest that they're dealing with it. But he will be able to carry on his constitutional role, and that is dealing with state papers and affairs of state, as well as having an audience with his prime minister once a week.
There have, of course, been members of the royal family with cancer in the past, but it was kept secret. Why? What sort of conversations behind the scenes took place about it?
Well, I don't think you can be too sure of secret. I remember in the mid-80s, it was 85 or 86, that Princess Margaret went into the Royal Brompton Hospital in London, which specialises in cancer cases. And although it wasn't spelled out in so many words, the general feeling was that it was cancer, that she was having treatment there, and she came out and she did carry on until, sadly, she passed away in 2002. What it does tell us is a slightly more open approach, which is good. You can't hide these things. If the king is not seen in public, the question asked is, why isn't he being seen in public? Is there something wrong with him? And rather than get speculation in the media's pretty good at speculating, that they come out with it and say, well, he has been diagnosed with cancer. What it is, we don't know. And whether Buckingham tell us in the fullness of time remains to be seen. And he is upbeat and he is carrying on work as usual, albeit on an administrative capacity rather than being seen out and about. And that's the part that will frustrate him, because that's his job, to be seen out and about by the great British public, by the people of the Commonwealth, by the people of the realms, by business, by industry, by parliamentarians. And he's not able to do that. And when he's able to do that, remains to be seen. My guess is we won't see him this side of Easter out on the public road.
Can I ask for a few words on how you think the king will cope? You've known him for a long time.
He will cope remarkably well. That's one of the things that the royal family do. They do cope. I mean, we saw the late queen, who suffered mobility issues, and we saw her with a lot of effort getting on the balcony at the time of the Platinum Jubilee, and we saw her that marvellous sketch with Paddington Bear. They know that things, certain things have to be done. They have to be seen, as the late Queen used to say, I have to be seen to be believed. So he will cope with it, but he will be frustrated by the same token of not being able to go out and about and do what he does extremely well. Instead, that will be undertaken by his consort, Queen Camilla, by the Duke and Duchess of Edinburgh, by the Princess Royal, and of course by the Prince of Wales, who will be back on duty this coming Wednesday.
That was Dickie Arbiter, former media manager to Prince Charles, of course now King Charles, speaking to Paul Henley. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be a new edition of the Global News podcast later. If you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, you can send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. You can also find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Global News Pod. This edition was mixed by Matt Hewitt, and the producer was Emma Joseph. The editor is Karen Martin. I'm Alex Ritson. Until next time, goodbye.